So, welcome back to the Kind of a Big Deal Christmas Extravaganza. I am Clay Phoenix, and I am going to kick off the episode with a very special guest. So, tune in, because it's Jake and I to kick off Kind of a Big Crime for this part two of the Christmas Extravaganza episode. Welcome back to the Christmas Extravaganza episode of Kind of a Big Deal. We're kicking off part two with introducing Kind of a Big Crime. I kicked Doug out of the house and sent him to Susie's, which we heard from in part one. So let's kick it off and just talk a little bit to start on exactly what Kind of a Big Crime is. So Kind of a Big Crime will be our true crime podcast for Kind of a Big Deal, and we named it Kind of a Big Crime, keeping up with our traditional Kind of a Big Deal mantra. So we also introduced Kind of a Big Reel in the part one episode of the Christmas Extravaganza, and we also have released the first episode of that as a standalone podcast. So, with that being said, Kind of a Big Crime will be introduced here, and then it will be introduced, or then it will become its very own standalone podcast. So, without further ado, I'm Clay Phoenix, and I would like to introduce you to Jake Manahan.
How you guys doing? Thank you for tuning in.
So, this week, we are going to be talking about Bruce MacArthur. He is a Canadian serial killer that targeted gay men in the gay district of Canada, Toronto, Canada. And the story is kind of interesting. It's got some twists and turns. So we are just going to go through that and talk a little bit about it. It may be brief. It may be very long. We don't know what we have in store. So let's just take a second and kick it off with a little bit of information about his life before the crimes. Would you like to kick that off, Jake?
Yeah, so he was born Thomas Donald Bruce MacArthur, or, you know, commonly known as Bruce MacArthur. He was born on October 8th of 1951 in Lindsay, Ontario, and he was raised on a farm in, I apologize if I butcher this, but it looks like it's Argyle. It's near Woodville and Carruthers Lakes region. In addition to raising MacArthur and his sisters, parents also fostered troubled children from Toronto, often with 6 to 10 at their care at any given time, and they had a pretty good reputation in the area, according to a family friend. Now, he did attend a one-room schoolhouse outside of Woodville. Classmates recalled him trying to be the teacher's pet and forming a mischief by the other boys, of whom he did not fit in. He was also known for winning singing contests. His mother was Irish Catholic, and his father was a Scottish Presbyterian. Both were devout, always causing arguments in which MacArthur supported his mother. This led to derision from his strict father, who MacArthur later felt may have sensed his homosexuality. MacArthur had trouble accepting his sexual orientation, which would have been seen as abnormal in the rural Ontario at that time.
So with that being said, there was many crimes that was committed by MacArthur. So let's go into a little bit of the investigations. So, in November 2012, the TPS actually launched a task force dubbed Project Houston into the September 6, 2010 disappearance of Scandara or Skanda, and these names get a little testy.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm not really going to try to go too much into pronouncing them, but we'll use the nicknames.
Yeah.
And it was believed that he had been murdered, but there was no leads. So according to a 2018 W5 investigation, a man posted on cannibal website Zambian Meat in 2012 that he had killed and eaten a man in Toronto, which had led to the formation of Project Houston. Police briefly investigated a possible link between Navarathams
Skanda's
murder and convicted killer Luca Magnata, although this lead was eventually abandoned for lack of evidence.
And by June 2013, the Project Houston had identified two other missing persons, cases linked by geography, can't pronounce that, and lifestyle, Basir Faizi and Hamid Kaihan. Like Skandi, both men were middle-aged immigrants of South Asia, origin, who disappeared from Church and Wesley between 2010 and 2012. There was an anonymous tip linking MacArthur to Skandi and Kahan's which led to police to interview him on November 11, 2013. Now, police were informed that he had a romantic relationship with Skandi and had visited Kahan. MacArthur told police that he knew both men and regularly interacted with Skandi at a gay bar, but denied being in a relationship with him. Furthermore, MacArthur also admitted to employing Kahan, and whom he had broken off his sexual relationship. Now, the Project Houston concluded, with no evidence to link the disappearances, that a crime had been committed or to identify a suspect. And according to a 2016 case summary, there was still nothing to explain what had happened to these two men.
So, with that, before we move on, it's very clear that now we know that MacArthur had committed these crimes, so we can speak on this. So he is a white man, and he is targeting, I would say, Indonesian?
Asian. Well, yeah, Asian origin, so yeah.
Yeah. So, like, there's men of color.
Yes. So it looks like he's targeting a specific race. He has a specific liking to, you know, his targets. So that's what I'm getting gist of so far, on, you know, of what we know.
Yeah, so the missing rainbow community. On June 26, 2017, one day after attending Pride Toronto, Andrew Kinsman disappeared from Cabbage Town and was last seen in the area of his residence on Winchester Street. On the evening of June 28th, learning that no one had seen Kinsman in a couple of days, Ted Healy and other friends gained access to his apartment. They found no signs of disturbance, though his 17-year-old cat was found without food and water. They reported Kinsman's disappearance to the police the following day. Kinsman, who was openly gay and had deep roots in the community, was regarded as a staple and a responsible man whose friends felt would not suddenly leave, and certainly not without his cat or his prescription medication. It was also noted to be unlike Kinsman to go anywhere without notifying friends or family. Kinsman was active on social media, but investigators found his cell phone was turned off the day he disappeared.
Now, before we do go any further, I wonder if there's a link like there was with the first two. Because his name, I mean, I don't, you know, I don't know what this person looks like, but his name is, you know, common name. It's like a, you know, common Andrew. So I wonder if this is like his way of deferring, you know, who he targets or trying to cover his trail. I'm not sure, but I mean, I'm sure once we learn more about, you know, Andrew.
So I also feel like killers, and sometimes this is how hard it's hard to track a serial killer, is most of the cases will have the same motive, this same liking, you know what I mean? Like the same typical thing. Some of the
same
people,
pattern.
Some people kind of go off of that. It's almost like an experimentation period type
of
thing.
Yeah. Before they, you know, find their groove and
Yeah. So that's possibly what we're looking at here.
Now, at the end of July 2017, the TPS created a new task force called Project Prism to investigate the disappearance of Chrisman and another man, Salim Yassin, or Yassin, to look for any links with the unsolved disappearances investigated under the Project Houston. Greg Downer, a friend and a colleague of Kinsman who set up Facebook groups dedicated to finding him and other missing men, organized an August 1st community safety meeting in which police gave an overview of the task force and thanked the community for the abundance of information. They had received queer refugees, transgender, and two-spirit people spoke of their vulnerabilities, experiencing disproportionate violence within the LGBTQ community. Downer's group, the Missing Rainbow Community, provided strategies for staying safe when meeting people from dating apps. Realizing the difficulty police face with judicial authorizations for data from servers located outside Canada, which caused delays in the crucial early days of the missing persons investigations. Downer appealed to dating apps to provide an option for users to consent to have their data released to police if they went missing. There were safety hotlines that were also set up for those who are reluctant to speak to the police.
So, a little bit about Project Houston. Project Prism, which is the new project. Mm-hmm. Project Prism was overseen by Detective Sergeant Michael Richmond and led by Detective Sergeant Hank Idsigna, who had served on the Homicide Squad for over 13 years and had been assigned to Project Houston for 6 months. The task force also included an officer from the Sex Crimes Unit and 6 officers from Police 51 Division, 3 of whom had been members of Project Houston. The investigation was difficult because of the lifestyle of the subjects, who used dating apps and frequently met people who they had never met before. Kingsman's disappearance was central to the creation of Project Prism because of a lead obtained at the end of July. Insignia later said that a crucial piece of evidence was recovered because Kinsman's disappearance had been reported within 72 hours, after which evidence could have been lost. According to an agreement statement of facts read in court, police found Bruce on Kinsman's calendar from June 26, the same day Kinsman was last seen. That day, surveillance video outside Kinsman's residence showed a person matching his appearance approach a red vehicle. The video did not show a license plate or a clear picture of the driver, but the chrome sighting identified it as a 2004 Dodge Caravan. There were more than 6,000 similar models in Toronto, but only 5 were registered to someone named Bruce. Of those, the only 2004 model belonged to MacArthur. By late August or September 2017, they matched the van from surveillance video of MacArthur's apartment, but it was no longer at his residence. So, fears of a serial killer stalking Church and Wesley grew on November 29th when the body of Tess Ritchie was found by her mother in an alleyway, 4 days after she was reported missing. The following day, police announced that the body of Alora Wells, a homeless transgender woman, had been identified, her body having been discovered in a Rosedale Raven in August. Because of fears in the community, TPS Chief Mark Saunders held an unprecedented December 8 news conference on the 3 separate investigations into the deaths of Ritchie and Wells and the disappearance of Kinsman and Essen. Although the cases occurred in close proximity, police did not believe that they were related, and Saunders said that they had no evidence of a serial killer.
Now, in mid-2018, redacted warrants and police documents, partially, were released by a judge. I revealed that in August and September, police investigators had obtained production orders compelling the release of data from Google, Rogers Wireless, Bell Canada, TELUS, Royal Bank of Canada, and Manulife Bank of Canada. Around September, tracking warrants had been obtained for vehicles and phones. And then moving on to October, further orders were granted for information from Yahoo, Air Canada, additional banks, as well as Pink Triangle Press, an LGBT publisher. Now, MacArthur was named in a September 8th request to place a judicial seal on the warrants and later requested the seal warrants issued from September to November noted the investigation into Bruce MacArthur. In October, requested a noted circumstantial evidence that suggested MacArthur's involvement in the disappearance of five men, including Kinsman. Now, moving on to October 3rd, plainclothes police officers arrived at Dom's Auto Parts in Courtis, Ontario, at 70 kilometers or 43 miles northeast of Toronto. They were canvassing businesses for MacArthur's 2004 Dodge Caravan, which owner Dominic Vitre confirmed he had purchased on September 16th. The police found it intact and had it towed away, also copying a surveillance video of MacArthur visiting the shop. Vittery said that the officers later told him that they had found trace amounts of blood in the vehicle, and this blood was identified as Kinsman's.
Court documents show that in November, Cadaver dogs were brought to a Mallory Crescent residence in the Lees Side neighborhood of Toronto. MacArthur had an arrangement to tend the owner's yard in exchange for storage space in their garage for his landscaping equipment. The dogs did not indicate any human remains. A camera was installed to monitor the garage. Police also obtained a log of MacArthur's key fob for his apartment. With this and a tracking warrant for his cell phone, they built a timeline of the day Kinsman went missing. DNA evidence from MacArthur's van, which matched Kinsman and Eason, allowed investigators to obtain a general warrant for MacArthur's apartment on December 4th. Police then covertly entered MacArthur's residence and cloned his computer's hard drive. On December 5th, after consultation with the community, Project Prism issued a warning about dating apps, urging users to exercise caution when meeting someone. In a December 8th news conference, Project Prism investigators said that they had completed 62 witness interviews, 28 judicial authorizations, and assigned 308 actions, of which 225 had been completed. Police had also conducted searches utilizing resources from the mounted and canine units. On one occasion, a drone was used. They said that they had no evidence to link the disappearance. The investigation picked up in January 2018 when Insigna noted they had many 15-hour days and 72-hour stretch of intensive investigation in mid-January. On January 17, two pieces of evidence came to light directly connecting MacArthur to the disappearances of Eason and of Kinsman. A partial download of MacArthur's computer, which was going through forensic analysis of deleted files, yielded post-mortem photos of the victims that day. Round-the-clock surveillance was put on MacArthur with instructions that MacArthur should be immediately arrested if observed alone with anyone.
Now, before we do lead into the arrest of Bruce, I do want to name the victims that are known of MacArthur. First victim, December 28th, 2010. His name was Abul Bazir Fazi. Second victim, October 18th, 2012, Majid Hamid Kahan. September 6th, 2010, Skanda Navratnam. August 12th, 2015, Suraj Mahamudi. June 26, 2017, Andrew Kinsman. March 20th, 2017, Salim Mazin. April 21st, 2016, Dean Lizowick. And August 2015, Karushna Kumar Kanagaratnam. All five victims that are known. It seems like right here that five victims, they were noted by investigators for similarities, middle-aged, bearded, patrons of the Black Eagle Bar, and self-identified as bears, which around there, they were gay men with overly masculine traits such as beards. They also had a disappearance over holiday weekends.
I love a good beard.
Oh, I bet you do. Navernam at Labor Day, Fozzie after Christmas, Kahan during Thanksgiving, Isin on Easter, and Kinsman after Toronto Pride. So, if I mean this correctly, these all happen over certain holidays. So that's a pattern right there as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, moving on, we can go into the arrest of how they arrested Bruce, if you'd like.
Of course. So police officers surveilling MacArthur decided to apprehend him shortly after they saw a young man enter his Thorncliffe Park apartment on January 18, 2018, believing the man's life was at risk. A source told CTV News that the police officers found the young man restrained on a bed when they entered MacArthur's apartment. The man was shaken but not injured. Referred to in court as John, the man had arrived in Canada from the Middle East 5 years earlier, was married, and had not told his family that he was gay. He had met MacArthur through the dating app Growler and said that they had met for sex several times. He had agreed to keep his relationship with MacArthur a secret and left himself be handcuffed to MacArthur's steel bed frame. MacArthur put a black bag over his head and tried to tape his mouth shut before police officers interrupted him. According to the CP24, the officers had a search warrant for the apartment obtained after gaining blood evidence from MacArthur's van. Police seized electronic devices from the apartment, including 5 cell phones, 5 computers, 3 digital cameras, and about a dozen USB flash drives. Evidence found in MacArthur's apartment shortly after the arrest prompted investigators to charge MacArthur with 2 counts of first-degree murder in the presumed deaths of Andrew Kinsman and Salim Ihsan. Their bodies had not been found, but police said that they had a pretty good idea of how they died. Insignia was satisfied that there was enough evidence for murder convictions, even without the bodies. A source told CTV News that photographs of the alleged victims found in MacArthur's residence led to the charges. The Toronto Sun reported that MacArthur's computer had grisly photos of his suspected victims kept as trophies. During MacArthur's sentencing hearing, prosecutors said that the 8 victims had ties to Church and Wesley and a social life in that community. Physical similarities, which usually included facial hair or a beard, and 6 were from South Asia or Middle East.
And now, right here, we're going to play the interrogation of Bruce MacArthur after 2016 assaults.
And today's date is Monday, June the 20th, 2016. My name is Detective Paul Gauthier, Gauthier, badge number 5371 of 32 Division. My partner here is?
Constable Dying, 10055, 32 Division.
Okay, sir, and your name is?
Bruce MacArthur.
And if you could spell it for me, please.
B-R-U-C-E, and MacArthur, M, small c, capital A-R-T-H-U-R.
Okay, sir. And right now, you're under arrest. You were placed under arrest this evening for the offense of assault, okay? You've been brought here to 232 Division for the purposes of being investigated for that offense, okay? Right. So a few minutes ago, we just had a brief conversation. I introduced myself, and I gave you an opportunity to provide a statement, and you said that you wanted to do so. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And at the same time, I also asked you if you wanted to speak to a lawyer before doing so. I'm going to ask you again, do you wish to do that before we begin?
No, it's fine.
Okay, sir. So an allegation has been made against you, and this officer in just a moment is going to let you know exactly what that allegation is, okay? What I'm going to do to you right now is just read you a caution and let you know that you're being investigated for the offense of assault, okay? You're not obliged to say anything unless you wish to do so, but whatever you say may be given in evidence. Do you understand?
I do.
Okay. Do you wish to say anything in answer to the charge? Again, they just, do you wish to provide us a statement?
Yes.
With some clarity as to
yes.
What happened? Okay. So just to understand, sir, again, you're not under any obligation to give us the statement whatsoever. You're allowed to cease communicating with us at any time. But we're certainly giving you an opportunity to present your side of the story. So this officer is just going to give you an overview here of what's being alleged, okay?
So the allegations are that around 6:30 p.m. this evening, you met up with a gentleman by the name of at the intersection of Bathurst and Finch. During the course of your involvement with him, there was an allegation made of an assault, which in choking was the allegation made. And that's basically why you're under arrest today for that assault.
Okay. So, sir, if you would like to provide us with your account of what occurred earlier this evening.
Well, I met. We talked about going for dinner, and he said he needed to take a shower, so I said I'd meet him at the Tim Hortons at Finch and Bathurst. And so he arrived, and we were going to have sex. And he suggested doing the back of his truck, since it hadn't been used yet. It was a brand new truck. I said, well, there's more room in the back of my van. So we went to my van. And we started kissing. And I put my hand down his pants, and he wanted me to squeeze his penis. But then he said he wanted harder to pinch it, to pinch and pinch and pinch as hard as I could. So I did. And he got aroused by that. And so then I thought, okay, he likes it rough. So I put my hand to his throat, and just for a few seconds, because he, before that, he's very strong, he just completely turned around and grabbed me by the throat. He said, now I'm going to show you what I'm going to do to you. And he had me by the throat to the point that I couldn't breathe. So I put my hands like up in the air like a surrender, because I couldn't talk. And that's when he finally let go. And then he jumped out of the car. He said, I don't want to see you again. So I sat there because I was kind of out of breath. And I thought he was getting in his car to leave, because he started the car and was running. I could hear it running because he was parked right beside me. And the next thing I heard him say, it's 911 or whatever. And so I thought, oh gosh, he's calling the cops. And so I got out, and then he got out and walked around and was taking my license plates and that. And so that's when I got kind of uptight, and I got in the car and I drove off. And then the more I thought about it, I thought, well, I should go and give my side of it, but I could not think of like where a police station was in that area. So the only one I could think of was downtown, but then I realized there's one somewhere in Eglinton, and that's where I drove to.
Just on the last point, sir, did you go to that police station on Eglinton before the officers contacted you?
Yeah, no, I went there, and then they came there to me.
Okay.
So the lady I spoke to there, I told her I came to make a statement, and she said she ran my name, and she said, there's nothing coming up on the screen. I said, well, what about my license plate? And she said it would show up, too.
Okay.
So that's when she called.
So you went on your own free will. It's not like an officer called you to come to the
station. No, no one called me.
Excuse me, anything like that.
No.
Okay. So you indicated that this incident occurred with... what's his last name?
I don't know his last name.
Okay. And how long have you known him for?
2 or 3 years, maybe.
And as you're describing it, this is somebody that you're in an intimate relationship with. Is that right?
Well, intimate. We see maybe, I see him every 2-3 months, maybe.
Okay. And how did the two of you meet?
Online, I think.
Online?
I think online.
Okay. Has anything like this ever happened before, where things got out of hand?
Not like that. No, not that quickly. Not, you know, just like that.
Okay. Things have never gotten violent?
No.
No. Okay. So you indicated that, I think it was around 6:30 p.m., you said?
Yeah, between 6:30 and 7.
Okay. And you said you met with the...
Yeah, something like that, I think, would be 6:30 and 7.
Yeah. Okay. And you said you met at the Tim Hortons parking lot at Bathurst and Finch, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it still would have been bright outside at 6:30, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you indicated that you were going to have sex in his truck, but it was new.
He suggested that, and I said, well, there's more room in the back of my van than there is your truck.
Okay, what kind of truck did he have?
A Ford, Ford something, four-door.
Okay, and your van is?
It's a Dodge Caravan.
Dodge Caravan? Okay. And you said that the two of you were parked beside each other, right?
Yeah.
And then you went into your van, is that right? And then you said you started kissing.
Yeah.
And that's when this incident basically happened, is that right?
Well, then my hand went down his pants and he said, squeeze, or pinch it as hard as you can.
Okay. What part of the van were you in when this happened?
Backseat.
Backseat. Like the back seat or like the very back of?
Well, there's only one seat. Actually, the seats are all except for one seat, one bucket seat in there.
Okay.
So yes. There's quite a bit of room.
Okay. And was there a possibility for anybody else to see what had gone on?
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you say that?
Well, because you're lying on the floor. Who could see you?
Oh, so you were down some?
Yeah. Okay. Lying flat on the floor.
Okay. And you indicated that you started to pinch his penis, and he indicated that he wanted it rougher, I believe.
He said hard, as hard as you can do it.
Okay. And at that point, you said that you motioned your hands up to his neck.
Well, after, you know, we did that for a while until he was getting harder and harder.
Okay.
Okay, so I figured he obviously liked that.
Okay. And what was your reason for bringing your hands up to his neck? What was your understanding?
I just think, I thought he liked it rough.
Okay.
He was getting off on that.
And then you indicated that immediately he then put his hands around your neck, is that right?
He was like, he's very strong, and before you know it, he just had completely swung around and was facing me on pushing me down, and his hands were around my neck.
Okay.
Like really quick.
So there was a brief struggle.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't struggle with him after once he had his hands around my neck. He was very strong.
Okay. How long did this last for, approximately?
Seconds.
Okay. Are you injured at all, sir?
No.
Do you believe he would have been injured?
I didn't think so.
Lacey, did you have any questions?
No, that's pretty good.
Okay, sir, just before we conclude, is there anything else you feel might be important to tell us before we end the interview?
Like what? I don't know what else it would be to...
Just, we always give people an opportunity to say something that maybe we haven't asked before we conclude.
I don't know, we have had sex, you know, numerous times and never had a problem.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Time that I have is 10:28. Complete the interview here.
So, Mr. Bruce was some kinky shit, huh?
Yeah, he's a kinky son of a bitch.
I know we're kinky, Clay, but I think he takes the cake.
I do like to be choked a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm choking someone, I get harder, so.
I don't really like to, you know, get my dick pinched, but.
You should try it.
Maybe I should.
Maybe you should, and then we'll know.
Seems like it's pretty fun.
We'll rendezvous and discuss it. Another thing is, he looks like a sweet old man and looks can be deceiving. And we did read that he was a mall Santa one time.
Yeah.
So it's very, very crazy, to be honest. But moving on.
He could be our grandpas.
Yeah, he could be. At the time of MacArthur's arrest, Nsingha said the police believed he was responsible for the deaths of other men and most were concerned with identifying those victims, or that he was most concerned with identifying the victims. Doing so included coordinating with other police services, tracing MacArthur's whereabouts and his online activity. By the end of January, Itzinga said that they were investigating an alleged serial killer who had concealed evidence by burying it across the city. He described the ongoing case as unprecedented, with hundreds of officers involved and 30 properties to be searched. The Ontario Provincial Police, or OPP, and the Ontario Forensic Pathology Service and the Center of Forensic Sciences were aiding with the searches of MacArthur's apartment and the Leaside property. Additional charges were laid, and at the end of February, the investigation was expanded to outstanding murder cases, hundreds of missing person cases, and sudden death occurrences, coordinating with other Canadian and international forces.
Police executed search warrants on January 18th at five properties associated with MacArthur and his landscaping business. Four in Toronto and a 9-acre, 3.6 HA property about 200 kilometers or 120 miles northeast of Madoc, Ontario. The Madoc property and a home on Conlins Road were residents of Roger Horan, a landscaper and longtime friend of MacArthur. Another property searched was the condominium of MacArthur's former boyfriend on Concord Place. These three properties were released back to their owners by January 23rd. Of greater concern to the investigators were MacArthur's high-rise apartment in Thorncliffe Park and the Mallory Crescent residence in Leaside. The owners of the Leaside residence were barred from their home January 18th so that forensic investigators could search it. The search of the property was extended to an adjacent ravine, aided by the cadaver dogs and members of the heavy urban search and rescue team. Cadaver dogs took a strong interest in large planter boxes on January 19th. The planters had frozen to the ground, requiring heaters to thaw them. A large planter was wrapped on January 22nd and brought to the coroner's office. On January 29th, police announced that they had found the dismembered skeletal remains of at least three people in two of the 12 large planter boxes seized from the Leaside residence. Although the remains had not been identified, police had gathered enough evidence to charge MacArthur with three additional counts of first-degree murder in his presumed deaths of Majid Kahan, a Project Houston subject, Sarouz Mahmoudi, who disappeared in 2015, and Dean Lasawick, a homeless man who was never reported missing. Former homicide detective Mark Mendelson said the investigation would become the largest Toronto has undertaken. Criminologist and Western University professional Michael Arntfield said that the alleged method of disposal suggested a sophisticated killer who had developed his craft, and as most serial killers begin in their 20s, the crimes could go back several decades and represented the longest run of a serial killer on record.
Now, it's funny that you mentioned that they said most serial killers begin in their 20s. I was reading that they're also looking far as back as 1970, because there was murders in the village as well with gay men. And Bruce at that time was in his 20s. So they're trying to see if he has any link to that in the past.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Thought I'd pipe in and, you know, get that information to you. But go ahead.
MacArthur's past as a traveling salesman suggested to John Bradford, a forensic psychiatrist, an expert on serial murders, that police might have a province-wide investigation ahead of them. Toronto crime journalist James Dubrow said the allegations against MacArthur was the deadliest known serial killer in Toronto and the most prolific gay serial killer in Canada. On February 8th, police announced that they had found the remains of three more people in the planters from the Leaside home, and that one of these six sets of remains belonged to Andrew Kinsman, identified through fingerprints. Investigators said it could be months before all the remains were identified. Additional planters were seized from across the city, including one from Danforth neighborhood, and two properties in North Rosedale were searched. Cadaver dogs were having trouble detecting scents due to the cold weather and frozen ground. Beginning on January 19th, heaters in a large tent were used to gradually thaw the frozen ground in the backyard of the Leaside home at a location indicated by both cadaver dogs and ground-penetrating radar. A forensic pathologist was expected to take at least 10 days to excavate the remains by hand. Forensic anthropologist Dr. Kathy Grusbeer, who arrived to oversee the excavation, did not find any sign of soil disturbance by previous digging. Excavation of two sewage lines at the home was conducted on February 13th, and a section of one line was removed for testing. The police investigation had continuous presence at the Leaside home, often described as ground zero, and police established a common post on the property. On February 10th through 11th, the search of the house was completed, and it was released to its owners after more than 3 weeks. The owners requested that the police keep crime scene tape up around the yard to deter reporters by whom they were feeling increasingly harassed.
Now, forensic investigators spent hundreds of hours searching every inch of MacArthur's apartments, where Encingo was suspected some of the murders occurred. It took them several weeks before searching MacArthur's bedroom, where they expected to find the bulk of their evidence. The search concluded on May 11th, having occupied 10 forensic officers for nearly 4 months. They took more than 18,000 photos and collected over 1,800 items. And Cigna noted the thoroughness required, as the first murder was believed to have occurred 8 years previously. The searches of the Leaside home and MacArthur's apartment made up the largest forensic investigation conducted by the TPS. Now, February 23rd, MacArthur was charged with a 6-count of first-degree murder in the death of Skandi Navaratnam, a subject of Project Houston. Skandi's remains and those of Mahmoudi were identified through dental records and have been recovered from planters at the Seaside home. On March 5th, police held a press conference and released a photo of an identified deceased man alleged to be another of MacArthur's victims. They had exhausted their options at identifying the man and hoped the public could help. Police later received over 500 tips regarding the photo and were checking on 22 potential identities. They also announced that a seventh son remains has been recovered from the Leaside planters. Dr. Michael Polinian, Ontario's chief forensic pathologist, said that his organization had never been involved in investigation with such scope, drawing on the skills of each member for many unique challenges, such as scientific issues related to decomposition and post-mortem dismemberment. Now, this is April 11th. He was charged with a seventh count of first-degree murder in the death of Abdelbazir Faiz. He was, at this point, charged with the deaths of all five men from the Project Houston as well as the Project Prism investigations. The charge came as Faiz's remains were identified from the Leaside planters, along with those of Essien and Lysowick. Investigators had finished searching the Leaside planters, from which the remains of all but Cahan had been identified. They had one set of identified remains. They had also searched 8 additional planters from elsewhere in the city, which had contained no human remains.
On April 16th, MacArthur was charged with 8 counts of first-degree murder in the death of Karushna Kumar Kanagaratnam, whose remains were the seventh set identified from the Leaside planters. Police said his name had not come from the many tips generated by the release of his post-mortem photograph, but that he had been identified with the help from a undisclosed internal agency. That guy was a Tamil asylum seeker who was under a deportation order and had not been reported missing. Police said they would look into why his name was not on a list of missing persons. He had last had contact with his family in August 2015, and police believe that he had been killed between September 3rd and December 14th, 2015. The scope of the investigation was expanded at the end of February 2018, looking at outstanding murder cases, hundreds of missing persons cases, and sudden death occurrences, and coordinating with other Canadian and international forces. Police had received tips from around the world, including countries where MacArthur had vacationed. Insignia said that the investigation would take years. A police source told the National Post that MacArthur had covered his tracks using aliases online, using payphones instead of cell phones, and avoiding areas with surveillance cameras. The source suggested that MacArthur had targeted vulnerable men who did not have a fixed address or had not told their families that they were gay. Detective Sergeant Stacy Gallant of the TPS Homicide Squad's Cold Case Unit said that active crime scenes of the investigation took precedence over revisiting cold cases. Each of 600 cold cases was being looked at for consideration of further attention. They drew up a list of 15 homicide cold cases linked to the gay village, and fitting the general profile of the victims identified thus far, investigators began reviewing these cold cases dating between 1975 and 1997 for a possible connection to MacArthur. By mid-July, forensic testing related to the cold cases was underway, searching for links to MacArthur. The cold cases included some of a series of brutal murders in the gay village between 1975 in 1978, when MacArthur would have been 23 to 26 years old and working just a few blocks south of the gay village. The victims of these crimes, all gay men, were found in their homes naked, tied to beds, and stabbed or beaten to death in a manner described as overkill. In October 2018, homicide detective David Dickinson said that they had not yet found any links between MacArthur and the cold cases. So that's what you were talking about with the...
with the connection of the 1970s murder and profiling mid-20s.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes sense. He's in his 20s. They said he worked a block away from the gay village.
Yeah.
So there's probably a connection there. Just reading a little bit further in 2018, there's still no links to those cases, but... that was how many years ago now? So something new can break through and then there might be some information.
Yeah, it's about to be 2022. So we're going to wrap this up with the legal proceedings. So in January 2018, a publication ban was ordered on court proceedings, limiting what can be reported in the media. MacArthur was detained at the Toronto South Detention Center. Torstar News Service reported on March 19, 2018, that MacArthur was being held in segregation and under constant suicide watch. As November 5, 2018, MacArthur remained held at the Toronto South Detention Center. He made his first court appearance on January 19, 2018, represented by lawyer Marion Slee. He made another brief courtroom appearance on January 29, 2018, and subsequently attended via video link, represented by W. Calvin Rosemond of the legal defense firm of Edward H. Royal & Partners. Rosemond's biography on the firm's website states that he believes guilty pleas ought only be entered as a last resort. Rosemond noted at a February 14, 2018 hearing that it was MacArthur's third court appearance without disclosure. Crown attorney Mike Cantlin said his office received disclosures from police on February 13, 2018 and was in the process of vetting and screening it. In mid-March the same year, Cantlin said one package of disclosure had been made to MacArthur's lawyers, with more to be expected in the following weeks, some in the excess of 10,000 pages owing to the case's complexity. On April 25, 2018, Cantlin said more evidence would be turned over to the defense before the next scheduled court date of May 23, 2018, at which time defense counsel said that they were continuing to receive disclosure. On June 22, 2018, the Crown stated that it had disclosed all evidence to the defense. A judicial pretrial was scheduled for June 20, 2018. The closed-door meeting with the Crown and defense attorneys and judge was to address issues such as revolving the case without a trial, such as by entering a guilty plea, trial length, and procedural and evidentiary issues. Daniel Lerner, a Toronto defense lawyer and former Crown prosecutor, suggested that the Crown would consider severing charges. Lerner noted that a long and complicated trial could put a burden on the jury and create a risk of mistrial. Kevin Bryan, a former detective with York Regional Police's forensic unit, considered the amount of evidence to be cataloged and disclosed and believed a trial was years away. So, it looks like there was a long, long time
before it actually court. I was reading, looks like 2 years between then and then the actual court date was in 2020. Yeah. January 6th. That's when his trial actually began.
January 6th, 2020.
Yeah. So that's a big 2 year gap right there.
Yeah.
Just about. It's crazy how long things like this can play out.
Yeah. It definitely is. And then, you know, all these murders and they're still finding out about more that he might be linked to.
Yeah, so I understand that, you know, they want to slam with as much as they can, you know,
when they
can find out. But 2 years, it's a long time.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
And I bet you things were pushed back because of COVID.
Oh, yeah. I was reading some of it that he had did a video meeting with the judge or whatever. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
But, so he had his court date in January 6, 2020. It was likely to last for 3 to 4 months. Now, going on here, I'm just reading over. It said that each murder was either premeditated or involved other crimes which qualified them as first degree. 6 were sexual in nature, and 5 included confinement. MacArthur kept trophies from his victims, including jewelry and a notebook. I wonder if that notebook's ever been published.
Wow.
Think they published that?
I don't know, maybe we should dig into that.
Yeah, that's something I'd definitely be interested in. There's DNA from 4 of the victims that have been found in MacArthur's van. There's also, looks like MacArthur had a post-offense ritual. I see right here. Okay, so some of the photographs he had, he would stage them post-mortem, so after death. And he would typically have ropes around their necks with them nude or in a fur coat or hat.
Intriguing.
Some photographs also had their heads and their beard shaved, and he had kept their hair in a Ziploc bag in a cemetery, in a shed. Huh.
Interesting. So there's so much complexity to this case. There's so many details. So, in order for us to keep going, we're probably going to be sitting here for 2 hours talking about this case. So if you're interested in more about this case, there is many different outlets to learn more. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, we're going to wrap it up now.
Yes. Also, be on the lookout. This was for the Christmas special, Christmas extravaganza. For part 2, we will be having our own podcast coming out very soon, kind of a big crime. Anything else you'd like to say?
Yes, and this will also be released on our own RSS feed.
All right.
So if you're listening to this on our own RSS feed, then we love you guys.
And you could be anywhere. Listen to anything. Instead, you're spending your night or your day with us, and we appreciate it.
Very much so. So, with that being said, stay true.
Stay kind.
And never commit a big crime. Doug, Shy, Jake, and myself, Clay, want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year, bitches. On the first day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me a Woody on Santa's lap. On the second day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me two butt plugs and a Woody on Santa's lap. On the third day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me three naked bears, two butt plugs, and a Woody on Santa's lap. On the fourth day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me four penetrating cocks, three naked bears, two butt plugs, and a Woody on Santa's lap. On the fifth day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me five drag queens. Where my girls at? Four penetrating cocks, three naked bears, two butt plugs, and a Woody on Santa's lap. On the sixth day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me six STIs, five drag queens. Where my girls at? Four penetrating cocks, three naked bears, two butt plugs, and a Woody on Santa's lap. On the seventh day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me seven cocks of spray, six STIs, five drag queens. Where my girls at? Four penetrating cocks, three naked bears, two butt plugs, and a Woody on Santa's lap. On the eighth day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me eight men sucking, seven cocks of spraying, six STIs, five drag queens. Where my girls at? Four penetrating cocks, three naked bears, two butt plugs, and a Woody on Santa's lap. On the ninth day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me nine raised shots, eight men sucking, seven cocks of spraying, six STIs, five drag queens. Where my girls at? Four penetrating cocks, three naked bears, two butt plugs, and a Woody on Santa's lap. On the 10th day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me 10 tossed salads, nine raised shots, eight men sucking, seven cocks of spraying, six STIs, five drag queens. Where my girls at? Four penetrating cocks, three naked bears, two butt plugs, and a Woody on Santa's lap. On the 11th day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me 11 pairs of underwear, 10 tossed salads, nine raised shots, eight men sucking, seven cocks of spraying, six STIs, five drag queens. Where my girls at? Four penetrating cocks, three naked bears, two butt plugs, and a Woody on Santa's lap. On the 12th day of Christmas, my hookup gave to me 12 iced coffees, 11 pairs of underwear, 10 tossed salads, nine raised shots, eight men sucking, seven cocks of spraying, six STIs, five drag queens. Where my girls at? Four penetrating cocks, three naked bears, two butt plugs, and a Woody on Santa's lap. Merry Christmas to everybody in the Kind Fam. So, after Christmas sales, garbage.
Did you go today?
Yeah, I went up this evening because I had to get out of the house. And I was like, I'm just going to...
frustrate you?
No. Just, I've been in the house all day. So I wanted to go do something. So I went up to look at after Christmas sales. And garbage.
You want to know the truth? The stores didn't stock their shelves either as much as they did previous Christmases. It seems like they had half the stock they usually get. Because I think they did that because they're tired of all the stock that gets sold for 90% off, half price off at the end of the season. So they've just been cutting back on that.
I don't know. I don't know if it was that or if it was because we couldn't get anything. Because
we could we barely had any Christmas trees. Even the Walmarts I went to, there wasn't a single Walmart except for one that had the little Christmas tree island. And even that one wasn't that big. They had like 10 trees in it. Last year they had like 40 or 50.
The Shrewsbury one had the island.
But it was sparse.
But they couldn't get anything.
You know? And everything they didn't have the variety of last year. Remember that you had the Christmas trees that lit up and had the Santa Claus thing? Your mom got one.
Yeah.
That little, yeah, like they had stuff, cool stuff. You know, the lampposts are my favorite, and I want a couple of those, obviously. You know?
Yeah, but it seems like all the stuff was still in the fucking boats.
Why is the Grinch so thick? He's got more cake than 10 St. Nicks. An ass so fat that it makes me sick. What in the world could he do with it? He's got a dump truck too big for the road. You bet your skinny ass it's a damn wide load. And his cheeks clap clap, what a fun neat trick. Why oh why is the Grinch so thick?
I was expecting to say, I bet he has a big dick.
About the crack doctor?
Yeah. That doctor's just cracking everybody's backs, and, like, he's a chiropractor, and everybody's, like, going crazy on TikTok and Facebook.
No. What did you put? I don't remember that. I don't see a lot of stuff on Facebook because I don't get on it a lot.
Well, you need to follow me, and you need to make sure my stuff's down first.
Oh, wow.
You know everything I'm doing. So.
When do I know everything you're doing? I had to text you today and be like, hey, are you still alive?
No, I texted you today and asked if you were doing a podcast.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I was going to text you and ask if you were still alive.
Well, I got off work and I headed out to Walmart for a little while because I was like checking out like store stuff, like clearance stuff for Christmas. And then there was nothing. There was like no red lights. We needed red lights. There was no red lights at all. Unless you wanted to get those big, fat, juicy, gloppy things. So then, like, I just went to the Kohl's and hung out. And then that's when I texted you to find out what was going on so I knew how late to stay there and when to come home. You know, and, like, my day's been long, boring, and uneventful. It has. At one point, I'm like, because last night I only got 3 hours sleep because I partied with my cousin all night. So by the time I got home, it was 6 o'clock, and baby girl's who's trying to jump up on you?
Bentley.
Benny Puss. Yeah, so he wants you.
I gotta pick him up.
He wants you to move that wire too, the big thick one. But no,
I kind of can't move that. Where am I gonna move it?
I've been tired all day because only having 3 hours sleep, basically. So like I'm drained anyway, and like Nicole and them were like, "Are you okay?" And then Nicole even came out and sat down. And she's like, are you sure you're okay? I'm like, actually, yeah, I'm tired as fuck. And I just told her about having 3 hours sleep on it. But I don't even know why I'm talking about all this. No, she's like, yeah, but she was really worried. And I'm like, I'm fine other than being tired as fuck. Like, I need at least 6 hours or 12 hours. Like, I'm good. It has to be 6 or 12. And she's like, really? She's like, my daughter's the same way. If she doesn't get 6 hours sleep, she's a crabby, ignorant bitch, you know?
Yeah.
And Haley's like, yeah, that's true. But, yeah, like, I didn't get enough sleep last night, so all day long I've just been tired and out of it and draining, and I felt like, you know, the world's just sluggishly moving by. And I'm just, like, enjoying it, almost like tubing on molasses. Fuck it, let's go to bed.
So before we came back to start talking with each other, everybody got to hear the 12 gay days of Christmas. You got to hear it. I sent it to you.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Well, I posted that post I was telling you about, Dr. Crack.
Yeah.
I said, have you all heard about this guy? He is a doctor cracking everyone's back on Facebook, TikTok, and all that shit. Well, he's the hottest cracker I know. And I put hottest cracker I know on his thing because he's a back cracker and he's a white guy.
That's racist.
And I put it up there and nobody's commenting. I had Maya's laughing at it, you know, Sabrina Smallwood. Carol Moore, Angie Gates and Jameson Foss all laughed their asses off, but nobody else has seen it. I'm like, that's funny shit, you know? But I digress. What was the question you asked me a second ago?
You expect me to remember that?
Well,
you should have answered it before going on. You know how my brain works.
Well, that's the thing, because even if you like just made up a question now, if we listen to the podcast later, I'd be like, that wasn't the question he asked originally.
Yeah.
He just made something up. So you're sitting here like, can I really make it up and get away with it?
No. I'm trying to remember what I asked you. I remember now. The 12 days of Gaymas. What did you think of it?
I, for one, hate that song because it's so repetitive. You know, like, because you're counting one by one and going back through the list. And it's like, to me, that style of music is annoying.
Yeah.
You know? But the song, it was funny as hell. I was laughing my ass off, you know, especially the way you sang it, because you emphasized certain things. I was laughing at it. I thought it was funny, and I really liked it a lot. But
in one part, I was like, cock.
Yeah.
Like, really, like, pronounce the cock.
Yeah, and then today I was driving down the road, and Carrie Underwood was singing "O Come All Ye Faithful." When I started laughing, and I started trying to sing it the way that we made it up, and I think we got it down. I think we got something.
Tune in next year.
Yeah, next year. "O Come All Ye Faithful."
So
joyful and dry humping.
So we kicked off kind of a big crime in this episode. We kicked off kind of a big reel in this episode. So two very exciting new shows. Kind of a big reel's first episode's out. Next week, we will hear Kind of Big Crime's first episode. And we are doing The Ant Kids, I believe it is. So tune in for that coming soon next week. And plus another episode of Kind of a Big Reel. And I'm kind of excited to continue growing our kind of a big family. Did I lose you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. My head went somewhere else for a minute.
Where? The galaxy?
No, I don't want to talk about it. Not on here.
Okay.
It was prior stuff before we started.
Oh, gotcha.
My mind just got caught and went somewhere. And my Aunt Nancy, thinking about her. I wonder if she hates me.
Everybody hates you, Doug.
Yeah.
Haters make you famous.
No, I'm just talking about other stuff.
Yeah, I know. So, we are recording this episode a couple days after Christmas. Actually, yeah. A day after Christmas. So, how was your Christmas?
The people that are in my life right now made it an awesome Christmas. And there's a lot of little surprises and things like that. And funny joke presents that really were cool shit, you know? But the hardest part for me is, like, not being with my family. Because when I'm with my family, it's just... I'm so uncomfortable, and I feel like I'm not welcomed. And,
yeah.
Like, even though I go, I feel like I don't belong there. And I always feel like that, you know? And I'm not blaming nobody. I don't know whose fault it is. It's nobody's fault. It's just the way I feel. But nobody gives a shit enough to talk to me and ask me why or what I'm really dealing with. They don't know what I'm dealing with. I have to keep it all in because my family is put your head in a hole. That was a long time ago, or that's in the past, blah, blah, blah. Like, they don't want to deal with shit. So it is what it is. That's how they are. So it's never going to get dealt with. So I had to change the way I see it. And this Christmas was my first time not deciding not to go around family and all that mess, you know? So there's a lot of emotions that I'm still haven't dealt with and things that I've started realizing that I need to just process, but I haven't finished yet. So it probably wouldn't be fair to even talk about it now, other than the fact that, like, it hurt.
Yeah. I was asking how your Christmas was. I didn't want you to, like, divulge the stuff that you're working on.
No, I don't care about that, but...
But I also...
It was my Christmas, you know?
I also understand it's a lot of emotions, and it's a lot to process. I mean, everybody has their things that they deal with around the holidays, and I feel like the holidays make things a lot harder to deal with because you have all these feelings and all of these things that you have been trying to work on throughout the year. And then when it comes to the holidays, they start becoming more prevalent and it makes them more difficult to kind of process and think about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'm also the type of person, if you and I, like when you and I broke up, I never told you that, you know, I never gave you ultimatums or said you can't have this person or that person in your life. I've never said that to you.
Yeah.
The only thing I've ever said is, like, sometimes your family needs to not be able to treat you that way. So, like, distance yourself from them. Let them see you backing off and not getting involved. Things like that. I never, like, told you what to do or expected you to do something.
Yeah.
You know, and I also expected it, like, when we broke up and we're doing their stuff, none of my friends treated you like crap or went after you because I wasn't talking shit about you. There was a couple like Christine and Leah and, of course, my cousin back then that I was talking to. And I was just telling them the situation, what was going on and how I was seeing it. And all three of them actually came back with different responses on how else I could see it. You know, so like I only went to those people because I trusted that they would do that right there instead of just bad mouthing you or being mad at you, because it's like neither one of us is fault. It was what it was, you know?
Yeah.
So like for a family to start unfriending you on TikTok, Facebook, and you see that all over a situation where I didn't even do anything. I'm pretty sure whatever's being said about me behind my back is making me look bad. And if they don't know by now that I'm not that person, then I don't fucking need them in my life anyway. Because you're not seeing who I am. Like, you're seeing this ignorant shit that somebody's saying. You know? So, my Christmas, like, I know, like, I've gotten way off pace for you probably, but...
No, you're good.
You know, my Christmas has been all that stuff that I've been dealing with, you know? And I've got to keep being the big person all the time and saying, I forgive him, I'll move on. The truth will come out eventually. It doesn't matter, you know? But
that just reiterates, you know, my point. Like, I mean, I said, is that the holidays magnify things.
But all these people that have, like, unfriended me and not talked to me because somebody's telling them stuff and putting it in their ear, all those people have had it done to them by the same person. And, like, it'll be your turn again, so fuck it. Enjoy it. I'm going to go love my life.
Yeah.
You know, and the people in my life right now, don't ask me for shit, are so fucking giving and understanding and talk. And, like, you're one of them, Christina, you know, Nicole, Jason, Haley, her daughter and stuff. You haven't met them yet, but, like, they're, like, they're cool as shit. You know?
I ask for things, like the bill money.
But that's not what I'm talking about, you know?
I was trying to make a joke.
But they will take care of me before they ask me to take care of them in any way.
Yeah.
I have to force them to let me or just go do it, you know? And that's what I do. I just show up and help.
Yeah.
You know, or I follow Nicole around. You need help? You need help? You need help? She's like, go sit down. You know, but like, yeah, just...
Speaking,
appreciate me, that's all.
Speaking of giving, I didn't wrap it or anything, but I found this at Walmart for 50% off clearance.
Yeah.
And I got it for you. Here. I got it for you. You're going to love it. You have a whole entire Christmas tree dedicated to it.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was the last Harry Potter one they had. The lady before me took the little Harry Funko Pop one. And I was a little upset about it, but I wasn't going to fight the bitch for it. You know?
Yeah.
Everybody was fighting over shit before Christmas. We don't need to fight after Christmas. But, yeah. So, my Christmas was pretty good. I spent it with my sister.
Yeah, like, you were at your sister's the whole weekend. I drove by and seen your car there.
Yeah, I got to hang out with the kids.
And I thought, like, and in my mind, I'm like, should I stop in? Like, I'm not trying to upset nobody.
You should have.
But like Carrie said, like, you're welcome here, your family, blah, blah, blah. And I felt like I was being rude by not stopping in. You know what I mean? Because I had other stuff I was planning on doing. And I'm like, well, you hung out last night. But there's multiple times that I've hung out with the one person multiple days in a row because they needed it or wanted it. And I felt like maybe the kids wanted to see me, but I just felt I was being rude by not stopping in. But I didn't know what to do because I also, in my mind, it's like you were there yesterday and any family time.
She thought that you and Christina were going to come over again.
You know?
Because she was like, just make sure they have a spot to sit. She's really weird about people having a spot to sit.
Yeah.
But yeah, she thought you were going to stop in again.
But I threw my back out. Don't tell her this, please. Does she listen to this podcast?
Yeah.
Damn it. Sitting on the floor, I was fine. But I wanted to go sit on that couch. There's some kind of weird thing poking up. And it threw my back out sitting there on that couch. I should have stayed on the floor. Because when I stood up, I felt it. And I was like, oh, shit. So the next morning, I was in a lot of pain. But, like, I don't like that couch. I like the green couch. I don't like that one on the wall. And she's getting rid of the good one, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I would almost just reupholster that and fix the bottom, the nets on the bottom, put new cushions in. You know, it would cost about $500 to do all that. But I think that would be a cool couch frame. I don't have time for shit like that. Man, you need a sewing machine. I got everything. We need fabric and sewing machines and buttons and all that crap.
Good luck.
You know, and it'll be sitting on a boat for 2 months before I get it. So fuck it. I don't want to deal with it.
So
how was your Christmas?
My Christmas was great. I got to see the kids, and the kids poked at me.
Did you go to your mom's at all? Or your dad's?
No.
One of those?
We were supposed to go tonight. Me, Carrie, and the kids were supposed to go tonight, but somebody tested positive for COVID at Carrie's work, and she didn't want to like chance it.
Yeah.
So we didn't do it. So the weird thing was is like I was like really like happy about Christmas, like, and I think it was because I kind of did it in my own little way. You know, the kids were like so cool. Like in the next morning, they were poking me to wake me up. They were like, Uncle TT, Santa came, and they were really excited.
Well, I think Christmas is about the kids. It's like when you make it about kids, like when you make it about buying adult shit, what's the purpose of getting somebody gift cards when they're gonna buy you gift cards? Like, just keep your fucking money. Make it about the kids. And
yeah.
Like, why? Like, stop. You know, like, I don't know. I think Christmas has to change. Because when I was a kid, I loved it. Like, Christmas was awesome. You know? And then I didn't appreciate it, though. I didn't have respect for it back then.
Yeah.
Now, today, I do. And, like, I want to have enough money to buy every nephew, every niece, every ex's nieces and nephews. Like, I want to buy them all nice, awesome gifts and, like, dress up as Santa and drop them off and do a whole spiel, you know? But at the same time, that's a lot of work. And I'm busy getting my life together right now, you know? So maybe in the future I'll be able to do fun stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that the kids know that, like, especially the ones in, like, my family, like, the nieces and nephews know that it's not about the gifts. It's about having your aunts and uncles and having your family around you. And that's why I really like it, because I don't have to get them a gift. They love seeing me, and that's a gift enough. So, last thing before we wrap this up.
Wrap it up. How long have we been on here?
Well, there was a whole hour before this, Doug.
Yeah. I don't know. We didn't record that long before. But it's all right. It's part of the Christmas special, ain't it?
Yeah.
So it's going in with other stuff.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying it. It's like, yeah, there's a lot before it. So, not like I'm trying to rush you off. We can
check
continue
to
talk.
I'm good.
I just wanted to ask you, like, what are you looking forward to in 2022?
I'm trying to get a hold of this lawyer who is going to be, like, representing me to get my record expunged. Because it's an activist type lawyer situation where they fight for LGBTQ people. And because of the way I was dealt growing up and the way I was treated and the path I took and my limited options and blah, 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 because of all that and the way I handled it and the way I responded after getting out of prison and how much I've changed, because of all that, I can get my record expunged. And I'm a minority, so it's like a special thing.
Okay.
And I want to, yeah, and then, yeah, like, I want, there's so much I want to do with my life, and I don't want my record to bother me no more.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't. Like, there's, I want to get a loan. Like, I actually want to finish, like, a nursing thing all the way to RN, you know, so that I'm making bank. And I want to invest that in an Airbnb or a bed and breakfast, like, somewhere awesome. And then all my friends and family will have somewhere to go and chill. And then plus, like, I can make money off that too. And it'll be my retirement plan, you know? And that's what I'm looking for, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
But that's what I want 2022. I want to see some type of light to head in that direction. You know?
Cool.
Or else, I don't know. I'm going to have to figure out another plan. But I think this one's going to be going to set me in a good direction.
Yeah.
You know?
So what I'm looking forward to in 2022 is I'd like to finish my book. And I would also like to finally get my pizza shop up and running. So I'm really excited to see what the new year brings.
Yeah, I finally decided to rewrite all my short stories that I used to write and make a short story book, because the stuff was fucking hilarious. You know, like, I could go back. I reread it all the time. It was laughing my ass off. People all around me were reading it and they were laughing. So I I want to do that.
Yeah.
And I've decided to do that in like a coffee table book type thing, you know?
Yeah.
Just a bunch of short stories. Somebody pick it up and read a chapter or two before they go to see the doctor and be like in a really good mood because they just laughed their ass off at this dumb story, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the same thing you're doing, the writing thing.
So, cheers to 2022 and Happy New Year to everybody that listens to the podcast. There's so much more exciting stuff coming from the podcast in the new year. So, with that being said, stay true.
Stay strange.
And always be
a lover of kitty pusses.
A lover of kitty pusses. Did we change it?
No.
I didn't get the memo.
It's always be a big deal. But if you're going to be a big deal, you're going to be a lover of animals.
Yeah. And always be a big deal.
A big deal.
Bye.
Hey, 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 I'm kind of a big deal.
I'm here and I'm gonna fly, gonna fly above the world and see it tonight. I'm gonna see the people proud, see the people living in peace, no war, cause this is what we need. And I say I am here and I am revolutionary. I'm gonna make everything look like it was a dictionary. All these words, pinnacle, heart, doing what you needed when you got me to start in. I don't want anybody to be left behind. Let's love everybody for who they are tonight. Come on, we are the one. We are gonna stand together because we can do this together. We can rise.
Stand up for what's right. Love them. Hold them. Believe in them. We are all brothers and sisters, and we will rise.